As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carbro and the Big Chill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM. Slipping closer and closer to the new year. Maybe some good changes ahead. Just wanted to touch base very quickly. Got some really interesting folks in the studio today, including Miss Peggy Taphorn once again. You can say good morning if you like. Anyway, we're going to let her introduce a host of people she's brought in that are introducing an entirely new technology to the stage. There's actually a book in my hand here entitled Live Movies, A Field Guide to New Media for the Performing Arts, edited by Kirby Malone and Gail Scott White, documenting Multimedia Performance Studios' new stage technology project. And we're going to get into that. It's something you're incorporating with Hamlet.
With our new production of Hamlet, right, which I mentioned briefly last time I was here.
Yes.
And this is just too good to pass up, so I brought some people with me, and hopefully we'll get right to it.
And once the speakeasy gets started and the glasses start clinking, we'll get there. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to acknowledge very quickly Cabin in the Woods Studios, or Studio in the Woods. I keep on playing with that, and one of these days John Demers is going to get on me. That.
Hello, John.
Good morning, John.
Yes, whatever you
are. I hope you're feeling better.
So do I. God knows he's been going through some rough stuff. Anyway, I just want to acknowledge his independent film studios. I think he's still promoting, good Lord, what was the name of that film again?
Will to Power.
Thank you. And a few others. And also want to acknowledge the Carolina Theater and everybody listening to us both here and in Chapel Hill as well as on the web. Acknowledging the Carolina Theater here.
Millions around the world.
That's right.
Millions.
We'd like to think.
Millions are listening.
I want to let you folks know what the schedule is for the Carolina Theater coming up. Just some quick events to
Well, before
to
you do that.
Through. Before?
Yeah. Why don't you introduce me?
Oh, and I forget the co-host. How rude of me. All sorts of things have been topping this
morning. Well,
no,
I just want you to do that so I'll know who I am.
Oh. Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, John Paul McClellan, co-host. Say hello,
thank
John
you,
Paul.
Thank you, thank you. Hello, John Paul. Thank you.
He's a bit of a Woody Allen this morning. Not quite sure if he exists or not. Existentialism creeping in the back door. Anyway, very quickly, Carolina Theater coming up. On the 9th of January, we have Barry Scott coming up. On the 14th, Brian Adams doing an acoustic. And then on the 17th... Campaign for Change, that's four as in the numeral, a local Keep Kids Out of Gangs charity. And then on the 18th, we have Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle. On the 23rd, Dance Theatre of Harlem. On the 28th, Rainbow Fish, which is a kid's show. And then on the 31st, we have Vicki Lawrence and Mama. You know Mama's family from the 80s.
Vicki Lawrence.
Them those there.
The lights were on Georgia.
And then coming up in February, for anyone taking notes... one film screening. I don't know quite what that... one film screening. I'll have to find out what that's all about. But anyway, then on the 7th, we have Versa Punjab Da. And my notes here are not a clue, so if anybody knows, please let me know. On the 9th, it's Fish Face, which is a kid show. On the 13th, this is what I'm hoping to stage manage, it's Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Oh, man.
On the 14th, this is a definite stage management for me, Arlo Guthrie. On the 17th, Guitar Blues. On the 26th of February, the Silent Boy Kids Show. And on the 28th, another one I'm hoping to stage manage because I'm actually friends with this person, Joan Baez. Seussical Kitty Show will be on the 2nd of March. On the 5th of March, David Sanborn. On the 6th, Art of Belly Dance. On the 7th, and I can't believe she's still touring, Judy Collins. On the 10th, Annie DeFranco. On the 12th, Miss Bindergarten Show. Actually, that would be on the 13th. I'm not quite sure who Miss Bindergarten is. Does anybody know here?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm sure she's wonderful, though.
Yes, I would think so. On the 13th, it's Pieces of War, which I believe is a play. On the 14th, Dance Educators of America Dance Competition. On the 15th, this is March, Chamber Orchestra. And on the 23rd through the 29th, the Durham Savoyards present The Gondoliers. And that's the scoop for the Carolina Theatre of Durham, so just wanted to be sure to acknowledge all that. And at this point, I am going to go back and give the mic to Peggy to introduce everyone she brought into the studio. Welcome, gang.
Hello.
Well, I have quite assembled a motley crew here this morning. It's early for us. We are beginning our tech process for our new production of Hamlet, which opens January 8th at the Temple Theatre in Sanford, North Carolina. It runs January 8th through the 25th. And the reason it's so exciting, not only because it is Hamlet, but I brought with me Rick St. Peter, who's the director. He's also the artistic director of the Actors Guild of Lexington in Kentucky. Adam Luckey, who is playing Hamlet. And Kirby Malone, who, along with Gail Scott White, is doing our new media, which I will let them speak more to since it is their, you know, area of expertise. But I think for us in North Carolina, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see this new media, as well as experience the 9 wonderful live actors that we have employed. And Rick has done a wonderful job in, what do we call it, adapting William Shakespeare's play. So instead of a 4-hour Hamlet, we have now about a 2.5-hour Hamlet. But you certainly won't miss any of the pieces. So, Rick, I'm going to let you speak to that a little bit.
Give us the date on that before you go off.
When January 8th. We open January 8th, and it runs through January 25th. Our performance times are Thursday through Sunday. We have Thursday at 2 and 7, Friday and Saturday at 8, and Sunday at 2 p.m. for 3 weeks. So come on down to Sanford and experience, like I said, this once in a lifetime. It's an East Coast premiere. This particular production has been mounted one time previously at Rick's Theater in Lexington, Kentucky, but that was a 3/4 thrust venue. So this is the first time we're using this new media in a proscenium setting. And I think it's going to be something really cool, and I hope you all will come out and join us for this.
And I got to sit in on rehearsals, and I can highly recommend it.
Thank you.
That's high praise. High praise.
Thank you, thank you. I'm Rick St. Peter. Hi, everybody. This production of Hamlet is one that I sort of have been kicking around since about the mid-90s when I first read Jan Kott's sort of seminal book, Shakespeare, Our Contemporary. Which the thesis of it is essentially that each generation kind of reimagines and reinvents Shakespeare and makes him what they need him to be. He has an essay called The Kings, which really deals with Richard III. But the sort of thesis of it is sort of what he calls the grand mechanism of history, and how history is a circle that is constantly repeating itself over and over again. And I sort of began to take that approach with the play, because the interesting thing to me about Hamlet, and what's interesting to me about doing it in our sort of thankfully post-Bush, pre-Obama world,
yes,
is you know, the notion of what comes next. If we're sort of staying true to the origins of the play, and we think that Hamlet premiered in 1600 or in 1601. Clearly it's a time when London is extraordinarily nervous about the future. Queen Elizabeth is clearly not going to have an heir. We lived through bloody civil war, getting her onto the throne in 1558. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen next? No one knows. You know, this James guy is going to come down from Scotland. What does that mean? Et cetera, et cetera. And the interesting thing for me about Hamlet is how the character of Fortinbras fits into all of this, because to me he represents the what is coming next. And we are in a moment in time right now where we know and are not sure about what is coming next. So it seems to me a very, very current play. And then the notion of adding the media technology to it. I first met Kirby and Gail in Virginia in 2001, and we were kicking around an idea of doing a production of the Laramie Project, which did not get off the ground, but we had stayed in touch over the years. And one of the things that I've always hated when I've gone to see Hamlet, and I've seen it a number of times, is they always have some fat old guy coming on stage going, "Hamlet, I'm your father's ghost, blah, 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 blah." And it just gets boring to
Hello, Jimmy,
me.
Yes.
Yes, exactly, to see that. So, gosh, I don't know, 2 years ago, Kirby, before we did, about a year and a half before we did it in Lexington, I called him up and said, "How would you like to work on a production of Hamlet at my theater?" And him and Gail said yes. And so that began the process, which led to our production at Actors Guild, which is my theater, in Lexington, which starred Adam Luckey as Hamlet. Adam is an artistic associate at AGL.
Ah, so he's done this before.
Yes, mm-hmm. And he's brilliant. It's the role that he was born to do.
I remember talking to him when I first met him. He said, by the way, what's your part? He goes, Hamlet. I said, oh, excuse me.
Mr. Hamlet.
That's right. Mr. Hamlet.
And so we, so things that we worked out over, Kirby and Gail and I talked for about a year. I spent a weekend at their place in Northern Virginia, just sort of going through the script. And so what you have now is you have a production where the ghost of Hamlet is also played by Adam Luckey. We filmed his stuff ahead of time, and I'll let Kirby talk about that.
Does he play a fat guy?
No, he does not play a fat guy.
Fancy wasn't available.
The Mousetrap, The Murder of Gonzaga, the play within the play, is a film. It's a black and white film that we shot. The scenery is essentially projected images that are somewhat expressionistic. And the other thing I always say, Shakespeare got long when we began to fall in love with naturalism. Mm-hmm. And so every, bad productions of Shakespeare have 9 million scene changes in them. Yes. And it stops the play. And what this technology allows us to do is it allows us to change location, change environment without ever having to stop the play. And it's fascinating to see it work. And I've always felt that if Shakespeare were alive today, he would be sort of on the cutting edge of embracing technology for his storytelling.
I can't imagine him not being curious.
Yes, exactly. And so to me, it's just, when film started in the early 20th century, the first thing they did was steal everything from theater. And now that we're in the early 21st century and the technology is getting more and more accessible, I think there are good things that are involved with film and television techniques that theater can steal back that we can use to enhance our storytelling. And that's what we're doing with this production. And it's fantastic. And I everybody should come and see it.
It's interesting.
Go Tar Heels.
It's interesting to think, because in all of the science fiction that's been written about the age we're living in now, we've had this concept of three-dimensional projections to interact with in the science fiction genre altogether. So it's interesting to see it sort of come full circle in that regard.
Yeah, the next thing we'll do, Kirby, when we do this again, is I want that Will I Am holographic image that they had on election night. That can move around.
Well, one of the my partner Gail Scott White and I, we as Rick said, we live in Northern Virginia. We both teach at George Mason University.
And this is Kirby Malone speaking, folks.
Yes, it's Kirby Malone. We have our own company also called Cyberbia Productions, and we start everything from the premise of the idea that as our society becomes more and more mediated by technology, that live events become more and more important in the social fabric. And our entire objective in what we do is to find a way of making theater that will interest a young audience. And by young audience, I mainly mean young adults, because they are going to be the audience for our work for the next 30, 40, 50 years. And if we can't get them into the theater, then the current audience will just age and evaporate and go the way of most things in this highly technologized society. So we use technology while at the same time trying to keep a critical eye toward the effects it's having on society. And in making theater, we are trying to... We also feel that if theater is going to survive, it has to find a way to do something that nothing else can do, that television can't do, that film can't do. But in order to make that kind of theater that feels relevant to our time, much in the way, say, Russians or Germans did in the 1920s in Moscow or Berlin, we try to use the technologies of our time to demonstrate that theater is indeed relevant. So that's kind of the approach Gail and I take to it. And we use everything, the kinds of technologies that you would see in any kind of animated film, such as Shrek or Toy Story, or the same kinds of applications that we use on the stage. So that's some of about our approach to it.
And I think Kirby's touched on several wonderful things, but the first one that I want to talk about is to get butts in the seats. And this is the production.
Bring your butts to the seats.
Bring your butts to the seats, because, like I said, it's never been seen before on the East Coast, and it's combining all these elements. So we are really trying to market this, as Kirby said, to everyone. We want media students. We want you know, the Game Boy and the Wii players to come in and see all of this. But I also want to put the emphasis on the actor, because that's what makes this different than going to a movie or playing a video game or playing the game in your home and interacting with a 3D character. Because that's what I think is lacking in our society, is the coming together, the communal response, and the experience of having this once-in-a-lifetime event unfold before you that you also have to actively participate in. So I think the technology that Kirby and Gale are bringing to us is one more tool that we can use to lure people in for this once-in-a-lifetime experience. But it would be nothing. It would just be a TV show or a movie if we didn't have wonderful actors like Adam Luckey. So, Adam, I'm going to hand it over to you for a second, because this is also something that Rick has enabled me to do, is to bring along this wonderful actor. And like he said, if he wasn't born to do this role, it's certainly something that he is well-equipped to handle. So I want acting students, as well as people who examine their own lives, because that's what, you know, Hamlet is doing in the process of this play, to come and experience with him his process that he's going through. So good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Yes, it's for me as an actor, becoming Hamlet, living his life, saying his words, saying his, you know, telling those feelings that he has. So many people can take so many different things from it. I mean, you can come to it just in the sense of, you've heard these words before. It's like, I just want to see what their take on this is, or, you know, maybe I'm feeling some indecision in my life. I'm not sure what I should do. I do know what I need to do, but I don't know how to quite get it. So for me, it's just another wonderful chance to step into Hamlet's skin again. And this time I think even give me a better chance to flesh out the character that I certainly felt was pretty fleshed out in Lexington, Kentucky, but here in Sanford at the theater, the whole connection with our cast and the multimedia and the crew itself just really has upped everything for me. So this is it's not quite a remount, it's a rediscovery of this character.
What crawled you into Hamlet's skin in the first place years ago? Obviously, you've played the part more than once.
This will be the second time. I've been around the play, reading many times and actually performing it as well. Played Rosencrantz first time through in 99, I believe it was, at an outdoor Shakespeare festival in Kentucky. But, you know, I mean, what actor doesn't want to say those lines? I mean, I certainly wanted to say them, but I never really thought it's like, that I could actually get up there and do it.
You know? Certainly a baptism role in theater.
Absolutely, absolutely. You just get up there and it's, I like to view it as like a, you know, like one of those pieces of elastic that are just kind of entwined around like pieces of nail, you know, and when you let it go, it just kind of swings around and wherever that nail is and the elastic just kind of whips past it, then it's got to go in another direction. You know, the play just takes you. You just undo the elastic and just see where it goes. And, you know, there are nights something will happen and it's like, man, that felt good. That was right on, you know. And, I mean, there's countless books about how, you know, the genius of Shakespeare and all that. But it really is an actor's, you know, tome. I mean, you just, it's all there for you.
I can see that, yeah.
You know?
And I think people who aren't even accustomed to going to Shakespeare will be surprised by the vocabulary that has just become part of our lexicon. When you hear, you know, Hamlet's big five speeches and also one that Polonius does, you're like, oh, I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. That's a song. That's a psalm. That's a common phrase.
It,
exactly.
Yeah.
And if you've seen Star Trek, then you'll also recognize a lot of Hamlet. Rick explained it to me when he was talking about making his version of Hamlet. Like I said, he really sculpted the script, that it's three men's dealings and their grapplings and how they deal with the death of their father. And so I want Rick to talk a little bit about how he shaped this particular Hamlet, because it's really interesting what you kept and what you left out. And again, since we are on the verge of what's next, particularly in the theater world, there are theaters closing left, right, and center. And I think that what's next question, and how do we deal with it? Do, you know, we rail against it? Do we bury our heads? Do we defend it to the death? I think are questions all of us are going to have. But I want Rick to talk a little bit about how he sculpted this version.
One of the things I think that you, as a director, you have to determine, unless you're doing Hamlet Uncut, it's such a gigantic play.
Which we won't be doing because it's 4 hours long.
Is you got to really determine what Hamlet do you want to tell? What story of Hamlet do you want to tell? And I knew I was interested in the Fortinbras angle because I've always been interested in politics and history and things like that. And so as we began to cut it, and Adam and I and Lori Janae, my assistant in Lexington, the three of us just basically sat down one night and started going through and going, let's keep this, let's cut that. And that's how we got the sort of original script that we worked from, and then we added and trimmed in rehearsals in Kentucky, and we've done the same thing here in Sanford. But it really, if you look at it, there's a kind of triangle of three sons and three fathers. You have old Hamlet, young Hamlet. You have old King Fortinbras and young Fortinbras. Then you have Polonius and Laertes. And each young man loses his father, and each young man reacts in an entirely different way. Hamlet wants all of the proof in front of him before he'll make his final decision on how to act. You know, because you can't really go on the advice of a ghost. How's that going to stand up in court? I killed Claudius because a ghost told me to.
Right.
Fortinbras essentially assembles an army and is bringing, you know, death is going to rain down death and destruction on everybody. And then Laertes comes storming in and is ready to kill the first person he sees. Mm-hmm. So it really is, you know, how each of those sons deals with the death of their fathers. And then another interesting aspect of it to me is also the place of women in this court, and how Gertrude and Ophelia parallel their stories as well. Oftentimes when I do Shakespeare, I have no problem with cross-gender casting. I just did a production of Romeo and Juliet in Cincinnati where Benvolio was played by a woman. But for Hamlet, it really is key to me that the only two women we see on stage are Gertrude and Ophelia. Gertrude loses old King Hamlet, but she's been in the court long enough that she's politically savvy enough to know if she doesn't want to become the sort of boring dowager queen who's locked in a tower mm-hmm. until she dies, that she has to remarry with the new power structure. And Ophelia loses her father while her brother's gone and has no real... she doesn't have the life experience to know how to process and deal with it, and it drives her over the edge. So there's so many different parallels that happen within the play that it's really kind of interesting for each actor. I mean, it's so... each of those characters are really multi-dimensional human beings, mm-hmm. whether they have two-thirds of the lines in the play the way Hamlet does, or whether, you know, we see them in one scene like Osric. I mean, they really bring the language is so wonderful, and there's so much there, and it's so rich, and you can
mine. What's kept it alive all these
absolutely,
years anyway.
Absolutely. You could argue that it's the greatest piece of art in the Western canon. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, it's certainly in the final four. So what, you know, adding these great words with great actors and then this great technology, it really, you shake it up and it really is a new experience. One of the critics in Lexington actually said in her review, and I'm not sure, I think maybe she read that you had the book in your bio, Kirby, but she said that seeing this production was like living inside of a live movie. And I think that is really the best quote that we could have gotten out of that review. And our audiences loved it, and the average age of people who came to see it was 33.
Interesting.
And I am 38, and grew up as a military brat, so I didn't live in any major cities, so I didn't grow up going to theater. I grew up watching films and television, and so to me, this is a medium that I want to play in more and more, and I think audiences will really dig it if they
speaks
come
pretty
check
well
out.
For yeah. a military brat.
Thank you,
Kirby. I just want to bounce over to you for a second. I was just finally coming to terms with your image. You have actually a bit of a Laurence Olivier appearance, and the voice certainly matches it. But you were telling me that you were going to do some teaching in California on the subject.
Well, I'm going out to be for a brief residency to interview for a job at the University of California, San Diego, which is one of the theater programs. Every theater in the country and every theater training program at any university right now is grappling with this idea of how to bring new technologies into the stage and onto the stage. And there's both a lot of enthusiasm for it and a lot of resistance to it. I think the when you start bringing new media into this term live movies that I've been using on and off for about 20 years, the basic idea behind that is that if you bring together two very popular elements, cinema and music, with theater and make a new form, mixing those three things up in a sort of a dialectical way, then you can, as I said before, open up the door to new theater goers, which is the whole point of what we all do, is to use the theater to talk about what's important in our society. The danger, the double danger of doing this is, on one hand, some people are afraid the technology will overwhelm the production, and we who do the work are afraid that our work will just be used as pretty backdrops for otherwise conventional theater. In my experience, I've gone in time after time, starting with the Seattle Repertory Theater, which was the first big theater I ever did this with, and everyone was terrified of having to talk to a 20-foot-high version of their own head and have dialogues with themselves. And my experience has pretty uniformly been that they're pretty afraid and intimidated when they go into it, and then can't wait to do it again afterwards.
Yes,
because
sounds like
first time
me.
You jump in the water.
As long as it's not the other way around, then I think you're going in the right direction. In terms of the resistance that some theater programs might have to it, theater is an institution that I think houses and embodies the most conservative and the most radical impulses at the same time in our society, that it's filled with people that both don't want anything to change and others who want to find the newest thing all the time, the newest way to tell stories. I think ultimately our practice, our craft, goes back to people sitting around a fire after the sun went down and there was no electricity, and the stories were the ones they told each other to keep the culture alive and to keep from dying of boredom.
And to stimulate the imagination, which is so rarely done anymore.
Right.
But I think, sort of trying to connect this back to some of the things that Adam and Peggy and Rick have said, I think Shakespearean theater is appropriate for new media applications because we're not trying to do photorealism. We're trying to do a kind of poetic, suggestive, dreamlike medium. And as opposed to a lot of American theater of the 20th century, which has been very influenced by this awful notion of realism on stage, yes. Shakespeare.
We've
instead,
had enough of that, thank you.
Shakespeare instead is poetic, and we're trying to do a poetic technology to complement, if you can use that word, what he was trying to do with words. It always bugged me in the theater when people run on stage and say, man, I just came from a rough battle. And, of course, they're running on stage talking about the battle because you can't show the battle on most stages.
Yeah.
With technology, you can actually turn around and say, see that battle right there? That was a scary battle. And you can have a suggestive representation of it. I've also hated it when they stand and say, look over there at that hill, and that house on that hill, and they point over the head of the audience. When you can actually put houses on the stage,
mm-hmm.
we can go from the inside of a brain to a battlefield, to a street corner, to the South Pole in 30 seconds if we want to. We also use the technology in many different ways. Sometimes it's a setting, sometimes it's another character that you're interacting with, both audio and visually.
And in that vein, I see it as another character unto itself anyway.
Right. It harks back to things like the Greek chorus. It can be used as a Greek chorus. It can be used as a commentary mechanism for talking about what's going on in a kind of distanced narrator kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So the possibilities are endless. Of course, it also has historical precedence in things like Balinese shadow puppetry and 19th century stage magic. So even though we use this awful term new media, it's actually an old new media, which has many ancestors and predecessors that actually precede what we think of as conventional theater today anyway. So those are some of the things we're trying to do with it.
Adam, if you can you talk for a second about how it was the first time you got to act with yourself?
Yeah, it was...
Because it was all through rehearsals. I'd say, okay, this is where the ghost is going to be, and then I would read the ghost's lines, and I'm the world's worst actor. So I'm sitting there going, mark me, Hamlet, I'm your blah, 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 blah.
Did you have a conflict with yourself? Blah, blah, blah.
But then we got into tech, and the first time when the ghost popped up, I mean, it was...
You know, Kirby was saying, you know, when actors first are, you know, this idea of having to talk to a big head, their own head, or talk to themselves or whatever, it really was a soul-shaking experience. I mean, that sounds kind of corny, but it's really true. I mean, you...
If you identify with the character,
but you know, some of it is like, my God, that's me, and I'm acting to me, and I'm reacting to me. But it's, you know,
this has gone too far.
The way that they put this together, and you know, the edits, and I mean, the story putting the whole ghost thing together is another hour in itself. But just that idea of being able to have something that is ghost-like, you know, but it's still you. It's fascinating, and I was completely overcome with emotion when I first saw it. I mean, and it really helped steer that you know, that emotion that I needed.
I can't even imagine imagining that and really sort of understanding what you're saying unless you actually go through what you went through.
Right, absolutely.
Well, and I think it enhances the actor's and the character's dilemma. Mm-hmm. Is this real? Mm-hmm. Is this my conscience? Is this
right.
My own psychosis?
Right.
Who do I believe? Mm-hmm. Do I believe me? Do I believe the ghost?
Right,
do I believe
right.
anybody? Everybody's lying to you, right?
Right.
So why would yourself be honest mm-hmm. with you?
Mm-hmm. Where am I? Who am I?
When your mind's cracking.
Well, it's also interesting because the first time he sees the ghost, Horatio and Bernardo and Francisco are there, and they can all see the ghost as well. And right. so he runs off, and then he has his... But the ghost doesn't speak in front of all of them. So he runs off and has his scene with the ghost. Well, in the sort of the famous bedchamber scene with him and Gertrude, the ghost reappears, but she can't see or hear him. Only Hamlet can. So, I mean, it really does have a what's real, what's not real, and what are the motives of this ghost? You know, it could be, and I think Hamlet says it could be a devil disguised as my father.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I can't act just on that information alone.
Yeah, I can see how that would not be enough.
Perhaps the whole thing sort of reinforces that question that's right in there anyway, right? Because you have this projection, and it gets the audience, it seems to me, would be more inclined to empathize with the question of, am I hearing the truth?
Right.
Is this the devil in mm-hmm. the form of my father's ghost, etc.? You know, there's something I was really interested in hearing about with this. I'm assuming that all of this stuff that's being projected is pre-recorded. Is that right?
That's why I had to hire Adam.
So you're not doing, you don't like having an actor off stage who's being shot with a camera and then you interact.
No, we do. There is some live video in it. The first time we see Claudius in the court and he has the whole speech about the dead King Hamlet and Mary and Gertrude, and that's done. We're doing that as sort of a press conference. And we're actually joking in rehearsal one day that Hamlet's there sort of watching it and not really watching it.
And I said, you were there.
I said, you know, run up and during Claudius's right. press conference, take your shoes off and throw your shoes at him and see what happens.
There we go.
Good move. Yeah.
So that's
like
done.
That shoe guy.
That's done as live.
You know that guy's selling 360,000 pairs of those shoes.
I bet he is.
He is. He got orders for 360,000.
Who figured he'd become a shoe salesman?
Well, the company that makes them in Turkey is...
Back to you.
So, yes. So, we do have that bit of live video, which is still shaped with Kirby and Gale's projections. It looks like... So, it's very interesting. You're watching Claudius and Gertrude have this press conference, which you're seeing behind them on the psych, and you're also seeing them do it live at the same time. So, it's sort of like looking down the rabbit hole. We do have the film, which was filmed last year in a vineyard in Kentucky. But the ghost effects were all pre-recorded. at like 4 o'clock in the miserable morning.
Oh Lord,
sick as a dog.
And but it's extraordinary. I mean, it really is. The first time you see it, you just kind of look at it and go, wow. I mean, it's amazing and it's beautiful and it's heartfelt and it's like looking at. It really is like looking at artwork that is constantly changing before mm-hmm. you. And but at the same time, and this was something that Kirby and Gail and I really, really wrestled with, was that it doesn't overwhelm the play. So you're not sitting there looking at these projections and then going, oh, wonderful. By the way, there's actors in front of it.
It accentuates. I mean,
it really does support it, and there's this wonderful marriage of human ingenuity and amazing technology.
So it's as though it was a prop on the stage,
kind of
in a very real sense. I can see that.
Yeah. In a sense, but I also see it as its own distinct character, because you immediately, because of the style of imagery that Kirby and Gail use and that sense of place. Is almost, like I say, a character in its own. For me, when I'm on the stage, it's me and the words, and what's wonderful about it is that it all kind of works in symbiosis. I don't have to say, well, I'm relying on the media for me, the same thing on their side. They don't have to rely on the actor. It's all just, it's there, you know, they just marry so well, and, I do my part, they do their part, and it just somehow wonderfully comes together.
You know, people who say, oh, I resist this technology, to me, it's as short-sighted as people 100 years ago saying that electric lights in the theater will never work. I mean, it really is. It's the next step in evolution, and I think not only do we need to embrace it, we should embrace it, because as a director... I mean, I can be so much more imaginative. I've said stuff to Kirby and Gail where I was sort of like, they'll never be able to do this. I'll say, hey, guys, what if we do this? And then the next day it shows up, and I'm just, it really frees my imagination to go kind of anywhere. And you know, you don't really get that in quote-unquote traditional theater.
There are likely going to be some people coming out of this saying they understand Shakespeare for the first time.
I think so. We mm-hmm. we got that in Lexington, so it would not surprise me if that was the case.
One way of thinking about the way the technology is woven into, and hopefully as seamlessly as possible, is that, you know, we had to decide... Since it's a play that starts with some guys on a castle wall pacing back and forth at guard, we had to say, well, what is the contemporary equivalent in our society of that structure? And what we all agreed upon was security guards, essentially. And what does security guards spend a lot of time doing? By watching surveillance monitors. So we took this imagery of surveillance monitors and guys who part of their job is watching these monitors to make sure nothing that's not supposed to happen happens. Mm-hmm. As the place where the ghost could appear. And there's something, I think, poetically apt and appropriate about the idea of thinking of ghosts inside of our media and our society, because we live in a society that is more and more dominated by how you live on the screen and how you interact with the screen and how you live in media. And we are all constantly in danger of feeling that we are somehow more real if we are filmed or recorded or online.
Isn't that interesting?
Than if we are unplugged from all that technology. So we're always trying to have this sort of mysterious, contradictory, ambiguous approach to using technology, to criticize technology at the same time. And I think when you bring in that security apparatus from the world of Hamlet, and how that relates to our own military-industrial complex that we live in the middle of, or which is becoming more quickly a military-entertainment complex, then it gives you a lot of room to play with poetic resonances between Elizabethan England and our time. And I was thinking back, Rick, when you were talking about the relationship of people losing their fathers and the relationships with their fathers, it's interesting thinking of the Bush regime in the sense of a father-son relationship, too, which has another connection to this play.
Well, there's another thing about it that I was wondering. The timing issue of the live actor vis-a-vis the recorded image. Of course, the recorded image isn't reacting to the live actor, but the actor is reacting to the recorded image. Mm-hmm. And so that must present some really interesting permutations of, you know, well, you know that the recorded image is going to do things exactly the same way it did it the last time, and you maybe play against that.
Well, I've worked with some actors like that as well.
I can see that.
You do a long run, like Showboat for 3 years, you get the same performance by that eighth show on a Sunday. You know exactly what people are going to do. But it does offer some challenges, which I want Adam to address. I also want to address the setting of this particular play, because I know Shakespeare has been done, you know, in the 20s, in the 18th century, in the 16th century, in the future. And I think this production is so interesting, and I want Rick and Kirby to address where this production is taking place as
and
well.
And very quickly before we go, this, so that I don't forget this, just wanted to mention that I had mentioned the artistic concept of all this to Bruce Mitchell, the new cover art winner for ArtSync magazine, and he's actually going to be on the show next week. Was originally scheduled to be on today, but didn't confirm in time, so we've got him on next week.
Yeah, we get the whole hour.
That's right. Actually, that's usually how I do it. I bring him on for an hour. But so just wanted to mention Bruce, and also mention that I mentioned this to Ira David Wood. I'm hoping he can bring some of his entourage to come and watch this at Temple Theatre beginning on the 8th of January, and it actually begins with a little cocktail party at 6:30 p.m., right. So come to that. Back to you.
In the playbill in Lexington, it said time and place, and I actually had in the playbill anywhere, any place, anytime. It's a kind of semi-alternative future. Kirby and Gail and I talked about films like V for Vendetta and Children of Men, Blade Runner. And when I went to visit them in Northern Virginia, we went into D.C. for the evening. And as we were coming in, down by the Capitol, coming into D.C., there was this, like one of those road signs that you see where it says, you know, left lane closed, 1 mile, merge left. It's mm-hmm. one of the LED things.
Digital signage.
Yes. As we were coming in by the Pentagon and everything, it said, report suspicious activity. And it just...
Look behind these doors.
I was like, oh my God, we are, as citizens, we're being encouraged to spy on our fellow citizens in this
is
sort
the Third Reich emerging.
Climate of fear that we've been encouraged to live in after we get done shopping at Walmart. And so the images that you see... pre-show, while the guard, you know, we have armed guards patrolling the theater, up on the stage in the VOMs and in the aisleway, and as you're coming in, and on the projection scrim is these surveillance camera monitors, but above it there's a rotating image that says "Long live the King," and it goes out, and then it says "Report suspicious activity." So it is grounded in a kind of now, but it's a now that I hope we're not going towards. But the longer I live, the more I'm afraid that that's where we are headed.
Yeah, sorry, too late.
Yeah, when they pointed out that truth is stranger than fiction, God knows we're living
right. But I mean, when I saw that "Report suspicious activity" sign in D.C., I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. You know what I mean,
I think that. Gail and I, in our own work, the ones that I write and direct, and she's the main designer of, particularly, we often call it cyberpunk theater, because the literary and cinematic genre of cyberpunk, some of the films that Rick mentioned earlier, and the entire cyberpunk movement that came out of writers like William Burroughs and Ursula Le Guin, J.G. Ballard, and then there's younger writers like William Gibson and Bruce Sterling and Pat Cadigan and John Shirley. The notion of cyberpunk science fiction, rather than being long ago and far away or far in the future and in some kind of antiseptic, all white, sterilized universe, cyberpunk science fiction is about speculative stories that set just around the corner in time, so to speak, so that they're just enough in the future to be slightly different from our time, but not so much that people don't feel an association with it. And I think that those kinds of stories and that kind, that genre is always trying, it's full of cautionary tales. Another mm-hmm. example would be Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
Yeah. Of course, yes. Very popular around here.
Taking elements of satire and and sort of pumping up the volume, so to speak, on our society to point at things in our world that we should be paying more attention to and doing more about, rather than sleepwalking through the mediascape, as we are so easily encouraged to do.
So, and there's also a sort of nod to classicism, classicalism, if I may. Everybody carries guns. Hamlet shoots Polonius. He doesn't stab him. But the final, I didn't give anything away there. the final duel between Hamlet and Laertes at the end of the play is done with rapier and dagger. And it's important to me that in this kind of decaying, semi-future, post-future society, that they're still holding on to the classical ways to kill each other. Yeah, so there, it harkens back to there's the ceremony and the formality of the duel.
There's also honor in that.
Yes.
That you don't have when you just pull out a gun and
correct.
Shoot someone.
Get on the mic, Peggy. Yeah,
what I said was there's also the honor issue, because Laertes is coming back to defend something. The death of his father. And I think that in our society, hopefully, we will always also hearken back to what is an honorable deed. You know, whether it's unconscionable or not is another thing. But
and one thing for me, you know, this whatever world or place we set it, Hamlet is still suffering through the same issues that he will in any, you know, 1601 Elizabethan production, Beerbohm Tree, late 1800s to, you know, early 1900s to what we're doing now. Hamlet is still Hamlet, you know. He uses a cell phone, you know, he might pick up a gun, you know, but he still is suffering through those same things that he suffered through for 400 years. So there's really nothing. I don't come into it in the sense of this is, you know, 21st century and there's technology all around me and all this. If for Hamlet, if anything, he would like to push all that away and go back to books and go back to, you know, maybe after all this is done, just go to the Hermitage and just, you know, live life that way. So I don't come in with this, you know, in the sense of he's a 21st century digital boy. You know, he is this, you know, he's every man, every woman, you know.
His best friend is Horatio, the philosophy student.
Yeah,
and there wouldn't be a play if Claudius would just let him go back to Wittenberg and study philosophy. And that's, you know, that's what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. He asks questions. He wants to learn. He wants to gain more knowledge. And the mistake that Claudius makes is the notion of keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Mm-hmm. So instead of letting him go back to Wittenberg, he keeps him in the court where Hamlet just wreaks havoc. And I've got to say also, Adam's performance is, there is no melancholy Dane leaning his head on a post going, oh, what am I going to do? It's very active.
Yeah,
it's
very,
very active. And he also, you, the audience, come along on this journey with him. There's no internal monologues. Everything to be or not to be, Tutu Sullied Flesh, Rogue and Peasant Slave, all those kind of greatest hits of Hamlet are addressed directly to you sitting in the house, and Hamlet is asking you to consider what he should do. If you were in my position, what would you do? These are, you know,
the audience is essentially a bit of a conscience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it really helps me as an actor. I mean, pulling them along for this ride and, you know, on the stage last night, you know, for the first time saying some of those things, like, oh my God, they're like just a few feet from me. It's like, you know, you could, you know, tell them to come here. I got to tell you a secret.
Claudio, make them say some of the words, because the words are that's the heart of it.
Say them.
All right,
we put him on this spot.
What would you like?
You're in the actor's studio now.
What do you need? What do you need?
Let's do Tutu Sullied Flesh, just to give them a hint of what's to come. Okay. So Hamlet has just witnessed the sort of the press conference that Claudius has, and Claudius has told him, we do not want you to go back to Wittenberg. Gertrude has said, Hamlet, please stay here with us. We love you, we love you, we love you. And they've all left, and he's on stage by himself. And he asks us to consider the following.
Oh, that this tutu sullied flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. Or that the everlasting had not fixed his canon against self-slaughter. Oh God, God, how weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. Oh, fie on it. Fie, 'tis an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Things rank and gross in nature possess it merely that it should come to this. But 2 months dead? Nay, not so much, not two. So excellent a king that was to this Hyperion to a satyr. So loving to my mother that he might not beteem the winds of heaven visit her face too roughly heaven and earth must I remember. Why, she would hang on him, as if increase of appetite had grown by what it fed on, and yet within a month. Let me not think on it. Frailty, thy name is woman. A little month there, yet those shoes were old with which she followed my poor father's body like Niobe, all tears. Why, she, even she, oh God, a beast that wants discourse of reason would have mourned longer. Married with my uncle, my father's brother, but no more like my father than I to Hercules. A little month there, yet the salt of most unrighteous tears had left the flushing in her gullet eyes. She married. O most wicked speed, to post with such dexterity to incestuous sheets. It is not, nor it cannot come to good. But break my heart, for I must hold my tongue.
Hail to your lordship.
Bravo. No. Somebody pass that moonshine. I need a pickup.
And that, I mean, that's modulated for radio. I think it was someone, absolutely, someone described Edmund Kean, I think it was, as watching him act Shakespeare was like reading Shakespeare to flashes of lightning. And that's Adam's performance as Hamlet. It's electric.
Yes.
And you will not, I mean, if you go back and watch, you know, Mel Gibson or Kenneth Branagh or Laurence Olivier, as great as they are.
Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
When
you see this, you will see Hamlet brought into the 21st century. It's an extraordinary performance.
Say the dates.
January 8th through the 25th, Temple Theater, Sanford, North Carolina.
Say the box office.
For tickets, please call... where's it at? 919-774-4155. 919-774-4155.
And don't
can you order online?
Yes, you can.
Templeshows.com. Templeshows.com. Not to be missed.
And don't forget, on opening night, there is a cocktail party that precedes the show at 6:30 p.m. That would be the 8th.
Correct. That's Friday, which actually might be the 9th, because we are, our official opening is usually a day off of when we actually open. We have shows on the Thursday prior.
Ah, right.
Yeah, the 9th is the Friday night with the cocktail party at 6:30 p.m. Everyone's invited. And then after the show, there's also a champagne toast on Friday the 9th. Wednesday, which I guess would be the 7th, is our community night, which we'll be doing for this show. It's $5 suggested donation, but if you don't have the $5, come on in anyway. We want this to be open to everyone, and that would be Wednesday the 7th. And, you know, I was just teasing Rick about, say, the box office number, but I've been told that, you know, Hamlet will not sell. It's not going to sell. The theater is tanking anyway, and, you know, if I'm going to go out, this would be my chosen swan song. But I don't believe that. I think that this, bringing in all these elements, the amazing acting, the cast that we have assembled, Rick's knowledge and talent, as well as Kirby and Gail, I really do want all of you to come and see this, because unlike most events in our lives, the movies, the TV, the living in our video games, this really is every night different, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it certainly is a once-North Carolinian experience for all of us, and I'm proud and honored to have assembled such
and
a group.
And I am so glad to be back in my home state. This is actually where I was born. So
welcome home, then.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
And just to encourage all of you thinking Joes out there, if you want something really challenging, I would highly recommend go to this, because I only saw the second act in rehearsals, but you can tell by the consistency of any performance on any measure of an act how the quality that it's going to be, and I take my hats off to this one. And Peggy, by the way, I got invited on the 8th. Does that mean I'm missing the cocktail party?
No, it's the 9th.
It's the 9th?
Yeah.
Ah, once again, we got the date shuffled. All right.
Yes, it would be Friday night. Friday at 6:30 is
definitely
the
want the cocktails. I think we need a little interruptus from co-host John Paul here.
You're listening to WCOMLP Chapel Hill and Carborough, your community radio station.
And it looks like we've got about 5 minutes left before it's our time to slip out of the speakeasy. Want to wish everybody a good slide into the new year, since I won't have another occasion to say that this year. And
Happy New Year, absolutely. Everybody.
Everyone, yeah. Indeed. And I'm very honored to have all you folks on the station today. And whoever wants to pick it up from here, go ahead and swing the mic.
Well, I just want to reintroduce one more time. We have Kirby Malone, who, along with his partner, Gail Scott White, is doing our new media. They also run Cyberbia Productions out of Washington, D.C. We have Adam Lucky, who is, we are lucky to have, playing Hamlet. I bet no one's ever said that before.
That's a new joke.
And, yeah.
Brand new. Yeah.
And Rick St. Peter, who is the artistic director of the Actors Guild of Lexington, Kentucky. And like I said, if theater's going to go out with a bang, this is the bang that I choose. And I am honored. So if you all want to have one more parting shot, and Happy New Year to you all. Come and see us at the Temple Theater. Keep live theater alive, please.
And we're very honored to have you as well, Peggy.
Thank you.
No one's going out with a bang. This will be a renaissance, a rebirth, if you will. So, I grew up in southeastern Virginia, so I'm about 3 hours from home.
Not too
and
fun.
It's been delightful being here. The folks in Sanford are fabulous, and I love it here. I'm not going back to Kentucky. come on out, see
it. No more horses for you, huh?
Exactly. The basketball here is better.
I've
heard that before.
Actually, when I had my interview in 2003, the board there, and I'm, what are we, two blocks from the University of Kentucky? Yep. They said, what'll be the hardest thing about moving out here? And I was in Virginia at the time, and I said, well, getting used to the inferior basketball you all play in the SEC.
I'm surprised at Harris.
And they still hired me. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So, go Tar Heels. I grew up going to the Dean Dome, and it's nice to be back in the area.
I'm Adam, and I'm just thrilled to be here. And please, from an actor standpoint, I think the language is spoken so wonderfully for all the actors. So if you're like one of those, like, well, Shakespeare, it's all these and thous and wherefores and whatnots. I don't think whatnot is actually said.
Much more to it than all that.
But in any case, but I think it is very understandable. I mean, because the emotion attached to the words and the 110% that everyone gives, I mean, you just can't help but get sucked into this fabulous world that we have created.
And I want to put a shout out to some of the other local favorite actors. Linda Clark, who's based out of Raleigh.
Hello, Linda.
We have David McClutchie, who's also our fight captain, who's based out of Durham. He's playing Laertes. I have Tom Dalton, who's on the Temple Theater staff, and Michael Brocky's on the Temple Theater staff. Robbie Gay, who is a freelance gypsy actor, director. I worked with him at the Lost Colony. Nick Ryan, I also worked with Nick at the Lost Colony. He's based out of Greensboro. And we have Ann Butler, who's playing Ophelia. And I tell you, if this stars align correctly, she should be a big, big star. The next Cherry Jones, and she's a Duke graduate.
And I cast her anyways, so that lets you know how good she is, being a Tar Heels fan.
And we have Tim Brosnan as Polonius and the Gravedigger, who is also based out of North Carolina. So we have assembled the creme de la creme, and I'm really proud of it. Once again, that box office number is 774-4155, or you can get tickets online at templeshows.com, January 8th through the 25th. Kirby, you want a final word?
Well, I've been meaning to follow up on, it probably comes as no surprise to anyone that the theater is suffering from the same economic woes that the rest of our society is right now, and even worse because of its dependence upon the philanthropic community. And for there to be any philanthropy, there has to be some extra money to spread around. And as we know, about half of all the so-called extra money there is has evaporated in the past year or two. So if you really value and care about live theater being something that can exist in your society at all, then the best way to show that is to come out and see Hamlet in person with all the wonders of new media can offer to make it, we hope, an even more exciting experience.
Real quick, as a guy who runs my own theater in Kentucky, we are not only dependent on ticket sales, but contributions as well. Ticket sales alone generally only cover about half of any theater's operating costs. So if you enjoy the show or any show that you see at Temple, send in a contribution as well and look at it as if you just had a great meal and you're leaving a tip. So thank you all. Come see the show.
Wonderful notion. Peggy and everyone, thank you so much for being here. It's been a real pleasure having you folks on, and what a great way to slip into the new year.
Thank you for having us once again. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me. And I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with the song of my heart, and the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift, adrift. Drifting ever back to you.